The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
Yes, Gerry Gilroy is with me from Off the Ball, Alison Curtis, Weekend Breakfast on Today FM. Gerry, you going to the match this weekend?
I am, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Big Cork / Tip fan.
Oh, my first All-Ireland final was 1984. I saw Cork win, breaking a famine. They're going to break another famine this weekend.
I don't think they are.
Oh, I think they definitely will.
No, I think Tip will win, actually.
I do too, just for what it's worth. I think Tip is going to win.
Do you? Yeah.
Yes.
Where's all your confidence coming from?
I think there's still a soft underbelly to this Cork team. And I think that a lot of these lads under Liam Cahill were bet by Cork in the Munster Championship in the under-20s and 21 and then turn around and
bait
the shite out of
that's
Cork
my
and all Ireland.
As well, by the
and
way.
I think that's going to happen again.
No.
Yeah. I don't say that with any confidence.
I actually think it's going to be a paddling. That's
do you think so?
I do, yeah, genuinely. I think.
You think Cork are that good?
I think Cork could be that good. There is just.
What are you basing that on?
The pace and the power and the stick work that they've had at various stages over the course of this year.
But they've been ropey at times. Like the double match is irrelevant.
I would agree with that, actually. And I do think that loads of people are delving deep into that. And scratch it. But the only times they've been ropey have been in games where they were already winning them. And it's like, this is over, we're a bit bored. And the man sent off in the first game that let Clare back into it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, the only thing that happened to them was that horrific day where they got annihilated by Limerick. And then they recovered from that. So,
yeah.
Kilkenny had the annihilation by Galway and then came back and beat them at the gate in the replay.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, I hope it's not a paddling. I'm actually indifferent as to who should win it.
You don't have a favourite, no?
No, not really.
Oh.
No, not between the two of those teams.
I would ideally
both would lose in the ideal scenario for me.
Well, you can't like Tip then, can you?
No, I can't. Or Cork. so I just hope it's good. I hope it's not a paddling. I hope it's exciting.
Box seats, have you?
I'm not going.
Oh, you're not going?
No, I'm not.
Right? Wow.
No, I'm going to sit home and watch the golf. In protest while it's on.
To torture yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry,
can I just, I know we're meant to move on to our winners and sinners. Were you watching the Euros last night, the England match? It was the worst penalty shootout, but the most exciting one I've seen in I don't know how long.
I was in bed, actually.
Were you?
I had already gone, yeah.
Oh, I'm the only one who watched it. Mm. Anyway, people at home, I hope, know what I'm talking about. So, Alison, who is your winner of the week?
Ireland.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
All of us?
All of us. So, I'm sure you are very aware of the UNICEF child report card that they do all the time.
Yeah, just pretend.
Yes.
Some people listening aren't.
In Aussie. Anyway, but it's a report card that they do based on lots of different factors to see how countries are performing with the young people in their country, and Ireland's out of 43 countries, number 5 for children's mental and physical well-being, and we're performing really well, and kids are really, really happy, healthy, according to this new UNICEF study. Where we're falling down is, unfortunately, like weights of obesity are kind of growing in a certain population, and academic setbacks with Irish in particular, with certain, primary school situations. So those are two things to look out for. But overall, we're performing really, really well. Number 5 in the world. And it might not come as any surprise that the US of A is at the bottom of that 43.
Is it?
Yeah.
But this is...
They're taking in lots of different factors. So
okay.
Like physical, mental well-being, skills that the kids have as well. And they rate them per category.
Yeah.
And
so who's top?
Norway is up there, Netherlands, Denmark, France, and we're number 5.
Norway is a petrol state, though. We have to always be... Oh, everyone needs
they're
to remember
four,
that.
They're not one.
Which is in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, exactly. The Norwegians. Anyway.
They've got it figured out.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, find loads of oil, then sell it to other people to burn. Don't burn it yourself, and then take the moral high ground. Yeah. The Norwegians really grind my gears, I tell you.
We were on a call with some of our European colleagues, and apparently the whole month of July and August, the Swedes just don't work. The country has agreed, no, we're not working.
But you don't think that's good?
I agree.
That's
point.
Great.
Yeah.
Great
yeah.
Healthcare and women and men very equal when it comes to paternity leave. I think all those things are good.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think in this country that we could ever get to that system?
Of half and half.
Of just a kind of a much stronger social democracy.
This is the thing
that exists
now, this
in Scandinavia.
Is really simplistic what I'm about to say, which is not the first time I've been simplistic on your program. But if you think about certain things being able to be achieved in some nations. You talk about transport, you talk about anything economic, all that kind of stuff. Why don't, if it's just a group of people living in a territory, why can't the same rules apply? And so if you figure out really good healthcare in one part of the world, why can't it be replicated in other parts of the world? That's very simplified. I know it is.
Not necessarily.
Take good practice from other places and learn their lessons and implement them.
You go and take what you want. You go, Canada does that well. Yeah. Australia does that okay. That's just blended together.
This is to pick up on a conversation we actually had earlier in the show. So Catriona O'Sullivan was in yesterday, you know, who wrote Poor. And she was saying that she thinks people in Ireland would be happier to contribute more to the public purse and to public spending if they knew where their money was going. They had a better sense of it. And we were talking about this on the show earlier because, you know, in the UK, if you log onto your revenue portal, their version of it, it'll say, Alison Curtis, I paid, we'll just take a round number, 10 grand in tax this year. And it'll tell you exactly how much went to all different areas.
That makes so much sense.
I just think it's a simple thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it'd have no effect, but it couldn't be bad for people to know
where their money is going. Ireland as a whole, I feel, is a very community-centric place. So Canada's willing to pay, for example, so much per provincial tax and federal tax because they know they're paying into something. Well, it was better, healthcare, I keep mentioning that. But Ireland, I feel, is such a collective that we would be going,
How much do we talk about transport all the time?
Yeah.
About the same amount of your tax euro goes to the justice system.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that maybe, and look, that you have to pay for that, pays for prisons and things like this, that's expensive. But again, I just think, you know, that sort of stuff people don't realise, and they might have a better understanding, and then they have a better buy-in, and they might think, maybe I'd be happier if, you know, that went up and that didn't.
Yeah. Maybe. The UK obviously famously does not have much of a society left anymore. Now,
Maggie Thatcher killed that.
She did it on purpose. That was a deliberate attempt to break that down so that the Conservatives could be the perma government. And it largely worked. You know, you'd have to, hats off, Maggie, well done. Congratulations. But they did kill their society. So I don't know, is this them trying to get some way of it back? Or is what that's doing actually putting a monetary value on things that are, you know, I'll pay your wages. You know, I remember my parents being teachers, being told by a woman at the shop one time, we pay your wages. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Why would you ever get involved?
That's not going to build camaraderie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so I wonder, is there a little bit like, 10% of
it? I think the people with that attitude would say it anyway.
Yeah.
This is true.
I think they would still say, I pay your wages.
Yeah.
Anyway. So so the entire nation is the winner of the week.
Looking
I like
after
that.
Our youth.
I like
important.
That. Sure. Who's your winner of the week?
My winner of the week this week is the good information that you can get when you sift through the cesspit that is social media. So we had this incredible interview with Eddie Dunbar on this week. Eddie Dunbar is a Tour de France cyclist.
Yeah.
His first Tour de France, age 28. He won a couple of stages at the Vuelta in Spain last year and was very excited. Was in with the break that Ben Healy eventually won the Tour. Or win the stage, which put him eventually into the yellow jersey. So he's riding really well, best moments of his career. And then coming down the mountain at 70 kilometres an hour, he brakes heavily, the back wheel locks, the front wheel locks, and he goes over.
Oh, I've seen the pictures as well, yeah.
Lands on his hand. And the way he described it was, he looked down at his hand and something was throbbing and he pushed it back in and immediately felt relief. So he got back on the bike and finished the stage.
Oh my God.
Another 5 kilometres. You're like, what are you doing? But the hand swelled up like a bap and next day he couldn't pull his brake, so it wasn't safe to go anymore. But we were talking to him about that and that whole experience, and he talked about how the professional cycling game has totally changed in the last 10 years, even from when he was 18 to now, where the kids coming through at 16, 17 have access to incredible information from nutritionists who are putting their stuff up on social and saying,
yeah,
this is what it used to be. Nico Roche the night before had said eating was cheating, and so they wouldn't eat anything when they were cycling. And now every hour they're measuring the night before 110 grams of carbohydrates and they're putting that in. So.
Yeah, it's actually funny you say that. I didn't know you were bringing that up because on their day off, Remco Evenepoel put up his food for the day. I like did the screen grab thing so I could, because it was on the stories, so I could just zoom in and look. Well, no, there's no way. But like, I found it really fascinating to know exactly what these guys are eating.
Yeah. And if you know where to find stuff and you know the stuff is high quality, then social media is an incredible force for it. It's very egalitarian. You don't need to be a rich kid whose parents have got you the best nutritionist in the world. You can literally go and find what the best athletes in the world
are
doing.
How difficult is it though to wade through the tunnel of SHIT?
I feel like I'm not
before you get to that.
With like you're talking about Instagram, are you mostly?
Well, I think that was on TikTok. The TikTok.
See, I'm not on TikTok. You are, I guess.
Jerry's trendier than us.
Yeah, exactly. But I find Instagram still fairly handy in filtering out the stuff that you don't want. Like if you say not interested anymore as a post, it kind of does disappear for quite some time, and you can tailor to follow the timeline is only what you're following. Right. So I think it's helpful. Like I'm following all these ladies that are telling us how to stay fit when we're perimenopausal. So it's great. That's all I'm looking at.
I'm getting out to cook hydrangeas. It's a good time of the year to,
very
to grow new ones, apparently. Yep.
Oh, yeah. It is. Now is the time to take cuttings. Yep. Lavender as well. Is it? Yeah, do it now.
Hydrangeas, not lavender.
What? Yeah. No, now is the time. Anyway, this great advice on the show today. I like this.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That Eddie Dunbar interview is like incredible. Like the pain and devastation he feels, you know, having crashed out, and it's bittersweet watching his international colleague get into yellow. And it's like, I can't even watch this, you know.
So. Yeah.
He has some cork, though. So
but they're like, I find them fascinating cyclists. They're a bit like jockeys. You can't, they feel like a different species to me,
I think the cyclists, they're the toughest. I think the hours they do, the risk, they're wearing nothing. It's like the skimpiest lycra is between them and
concrete,
the asphalt.
Do you ever, sometimes I do this. This is weird. Sometimes, like, I'll be, if I'm driving along and I'm, say, it's this time of year when everyone's watching the tour, I'll open the car window. Say if you're doing 70 kilometres an hour, and I just imagine what it would be like to just jump out onto the road in just Lycra. Do you ever do that?
No.
Do it. That's what they do.
Yeah.
That's to get your head into that space. Imagine that.
Like being near cyclists when I'm driving.
Is that the because of the Lycra?
I don't know.
You're just like, oh my God, what do I see? I can't just see it.
I'm on the side of the road going, I can't go anywhere near them. What if they swerve by accident?
Anyway, on that note, Jared Allison are going to stay with me. Jerry Gilroy and Alison Curtis both still with me. Alison, what's on the show this weekend?
Peter O'Mahony.
Oh, very good.
And Sarah Lavin.
Speaking of hydrangeas.
Oh, yeah. First. Ask him about hydrangeas. Ask him about the lavender.
That's the hook. I'm not going to go. I mean, I do know my rugby guys. You know that. But it's not an in-depth conversation about his rugby career, I predict. It's going to be more about his gardening. Yeah. It's part of the Carlo Gardening Festivals. That's why I got him.
You were banging on the lawn the other day.
Yes, we were talking about the lawn, nowhere near Peter O'Mahony's standard.
Oh, God, it's incredible what he does.
Yeah, it's beautiful, his garden. Anyway, I look forward to that. Who is your sinner of the week?
Pub closures. So, have you discussed this very much?
What are you talking about, the times they close or just the shutting up shop?
Shutting of.
Oh.
Like, it's kind of really terrifying. In the last, since 2005, it's two pubs a week now around the country, which is not that has to end somewhere. And one in three in Cork and Limerick, apparently. The Irish Examiner covered this. So, it's the Drinks Federation did a big study on it and finding out what's going on. And because it's one of those variable things, like, there's so many factors as to why. Like, we're now to the EU standard level of drinking, which I guess we weren't before recently.
What happened there?
What did happen? Changing of lifestyle, you know, patterns and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of people would have inherited the pub, wouldn't they have? Like in the families, and wanted to run it and considered it lucrative and all that kind of stuff. So now a lot of people are not taking it on as a business. So it's sad to think of them all like shutting. So, I know when I did a tour a few years ago, many years ago, we did the Platinum Pubs of Ireland when I had a nighttime show and you could talk about booze at night. And all the communities that we met and like how much...
Are you not allowed to talk about it in the morning or it is just that people would think you're a lush?
No, probably both. But you know that there are laws about talking about alcohol, right?
We're in trouble right now, I think.
Oh, are we?
We're okay.
Creamy pints, don't say that.
Yeah.
Drink responsibly. But we met so many people.
We'll just say that Alison's a lush and she made us do it.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Many people and like just how like and the stories of how like they had to be creative and, you know, get minibus services in and all that kind of stuff. Because there are people living across the country that would be isolated otherwise, and the fact that their family-run business is not staying in business. I found it really sad reading this report this week.
And so sad, do you think we should do something about it, or is it just one of those things you're like, isn't that terrible, but it's the way of the world?
Well, there are, like, now this is out of my depth what I'm about to say, but you'll know probably, but they're talking about obviously the excise of 10% and the high fat rates, and like, if you buy an example of 70, whatever it is, milliliters, a bottle of whiskey, the tax is like 12%. In Italy, it's like 290, or versus 12 euro here, exact facts, by the way. So it's just such a big difference. Yeah. And like, there are lots of different things that kind of could be brought into it. But I just found that report really sad because of thinking of like a lot of people that I know whose families did have pubs and, you know, it was their business and they're fun to go to, not to sound like a lush, like they're a hub of activity.
Yeah.
Really part of the Irish tapestry of culture. Like it really is, whether you, you know.
A lot of places as well, because there's a bit of me that thinks, I'm not sure if we should be subsidizing places that are just naturally going out of business. But at the same time, like there's lots of people living in places now, their post office is gone, the shop is gone, because people are just going to the Lidl in the next town over or whatever. Yeah. Not to knock their Lidl or your Aldi or whatever, but you know, just for convenience.
Small local.
The small school is merged with two or three other small schools and it's not in your village, it's in the next one.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
mobile bank comes once. The pub is probably the only thing that opened maybe 4 or 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And it would be like, it's just another hollowing out.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes it sad.
Like we were talking a bit about the pedestrianisation a couple of weeks ago. If every small town had an area that was pedestrianised, I do think we maybe probably need to look at something to do around VAT rates and and excise on booze. People do want to booze at home because it's, do they want to just do that or do they actually want the community of the pub,
well,
but it's too expensive?
If we don't act like there is, I don't want to get in trouble, but there is a pub near me, but I wouldn't be enticed to go to it very often. But if you had a local, there is something about just going down and even if you're there for like an hour or two, like it's a nice usually environment.
Yes, we'd be terrible. Like we'd be lazy and I'd just have a glass of wine at home. But if say you got the text, there was a few people down the pub and like we're lucky enough, you're walking or you could cycle down to it. Although have you tried to do the Bolt bikes where you rent them and ask you if you're drunk afterwards? You've got this reaction thing.
You're like, no.
I have failed.
Never cycle and drink. But like, you're not out of that age. Like I think maybe I'm thinking about
but
it.
But sorry,
now,
I was going to say, you don't regret it. You never regret it. There's just something uplifting about being, like we're gregarious people.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's nice to be around other people.
And you make friends with strangers.
Yeah.
We're out of that area now of parenting where we could go for an hour somewhere if we wanted to and come back and we'd be, you're not quite there, obviously, and neither necessarily.
You'd be getting but ye, before me, will get to the point, the really sweet spot, which is where the kids can drop you and pick you up.
Yeah.
That's there.
What is the age of driving
the golden
here in Ireland?
Zone.
16, isn't
it? Is it 16?
I don't know.
Is it? Literally. It is in Canada.
When you see a 16-year-old careering through North Dublin dropping George at the pub
in
a few years, you know what's happening.
I give her my permission.
Jerry, your sinner is somewhat related, actually.
Licensing laws, yeah. So there was a great piece this week with Ray O'Donoghue. He is the Dublin City Council nighttime economy advisor. I mean, nightmare was right there for them. it has a bit of a double entendre. Anyway, Una Mullally wrote this piece and he's just talking about how difficult it is to get clubs going, particularly nightclubs. And the specific thing they're talking about is the licensing laws where everybody gets belched out onto the streets at the same time and we expect the public transport, the taxis and the chippers to deal with it. Now, this actually pertains as much to small towns, medium-sized towns as it does to the big cities because, like my experience as a 17, 18-year-old, you've finished in the pub and then suddenly the town square is full of people who've just slapped back the last quick 2 pints that they were forced to buy and then not allowed to drink except really fast. And sometimes it gets violent. it definitely, outside the Supermax in Athy, there was several instances of my friends having trouble.
But when and we got to college.
Yeah, sure. Please, everyone calm down.
No, I was running away as everybody else was. When we got to college, like there was an illegal rave scene where you could go to beach parties. There was parties in the woods. There was like down where Google is, there were raves there and they were always perfectly organised. Occasionally the cops would shut them down. But apparently that scene is beginning to make something of a comeback recently. But why don't we just make it legal? Just let people, like in Berlin, you can go out on Thursday and come home on Tuesday and you can stay in the same place. Nobody does it.
Mm-hmm.
People don't go mad. People are far more responsible
if it's loose,
than we think they're going to be.
Yeah, exactly. If the rules are, if they're not there to break, you don't break them in a way.
And there's none of the binge drinking at the end of like the, so there are obviously some pubs which stay open to whatever time the late closing is.
Yeah.
So there's the first drink up and then surge the late bar and then there's a second drink up and everybody's coming.
Yeah. He was in with us, Ray, as well, and he said it was born this piece, I think, with in the paper. Who was it? Una Mullally, and he said by speaking to people in Spar and Gay Spar and Georgia Street that he said the people who work in there forever have tourists coming in. at 2 a.m. or even say 1:30 and say, sorry, where do we go around here? And they're like, nowhere. Like,
yeah.
You go back to your hotel room.
Yeah.
Like, literally go back to your hotel room.
Or it just wouldn't be North Americans asking for that at 2 a.m.
No.
They gotta get up to get the tour to Blarney.
All right, okay. Two worthy sinners of the week, licensing laws and pub closures?
Yeah.
Pub closures. Alison, you're going to stay with me. We will be back with the last bit of the show after this quick break.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Yes, Alison Curtis and Ger Gilroy are both still with me. Ger, Trainwreck, The Real Project X. What's this?
So Trainwreck is a TV series. They did the Woodstock. That was their first one. Remember there was three episodes on Woodstock 99?
Yeah.
And it all went mad.
Oh, yes.
So there's a second season of that now. The Poop Fairy is one that it was people were talking about recently.
Poop Fairy. Oh, sorry.
Last night.
Oh.
The cruise. The Poop,
the poop cruise.
Again, it was right there for me, wasn't it?
The Poop Cruise.
Yeah.
Explain to people what happened on the Poop Cruise.
I actually don't know. There was
the toilets all stopped working.
But the electricity went.
Yeah, so
4,000
no
people
you couldn't
on this ferry.
And well, you could, but that was the problem.
They had to poop in a red hazard bag.
Oh, people were pooping over the side.
This is dinner time for
chaos.
Be careful.
Well, but civilization broke down. Sorry, I'm hijacking your story, Ger. There was a big freeze a few years ago, and I remember we were all out in was it the Step House in Burris in Carlow, and like that, all the pipes had frozen.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
that cold; like everything froze. It was a real, real cold winter a few years ago, and the toilets didn't work. And it was like a full on like New Year's Eve night. You know what I mean? So it was packed.
Right.
It is amazing how quickly the society, the contrivances we construct to that hold up society begin to crumble when there's not a functioning toilet for people who are consuming alcohol.
I literally saw the clip of it last night, going, "I think I'm going to watch the Poop Cruise."
Yes.
Imagine life in the Middle Ages. So this isn't the Poop Cruise. There's like a series of episodes.
Yes.
And this one is The Real Project X. Project X is a movie which I've totally forgotten about. But in it, a party invite goes viral. A bunch of American high schoolers come to the
house. This is a movie.
And in the movie, the house gets burned down. But what actually happened was, in real life, a Dutch teenager puts a party invite up, doesn't make it private, shares it on Facebook, it gets reshared until eventually 300,000 people are coming.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of very affluent north of Holland, very rich society. And they're like warning the mayor and warning everybody and going,
this is happening.
The internet exists. You guys, are you watching this? I mean, their response was to hire a social media guy who went home at 5 o'clock that day. I was like, I said, don't come. On Twitter, I was getting back to them. I was adding them, don't come. But literally, you were seeing buses with the destination of the town from all over Holland. All the booze in the area had been sold to strangers. 300,000 people, maybe 70,000 people, some massive number.
A big
people
number.
Do show up. There's 300 cops. But the nightmare of the small town had suggested the day before, why don't we put on a party for them? You know, if you just like distract them all over here, corral them. And the actual mayor was like, nah, it'll be grand. What could go wrong?
And what went wrong?
It went very wrong. Everybody went feral. There was looting. It was like 70 or 100 people arrested, people injured.
Yeah.
The mayor ends up having to resign. I just think that you need to manage people late at night, you know, give them something to do.
Do you think you would be a looter in that situation?
Well, there were cameras.
If there weren't.
If there wasn't, that's worrying.
Yeah, it's the implication there.
Look, what am I saying, you know? I can't, what's that when you don't implicate yourself?
Yeah.
Exactly. No, I'd never be a looter. That'd be terrible.
You think that, but it's funny.
Is that
like,
bad? Like if there was like a really nice food shop that I could get my hands on, I might take a few things.
Like, if there's a riot in like Donnybrook, you're going to go into Donnybrook Fair or something.
I would.
You would loot Donnybrook Fair.
All those expensive things that you look at that you're like, I would like to buy, but I can't justify this 12 euro jar of mustard or whatever it
is. You may as well take a Rolex. If you're getting done for, hung for sheep as a lamb.
Yeah.
I don't like Rolexes though, do you? I actually don't like the look of a Rolex. No?
Claire's getting stopped.
Yeah. Anyway. Anyway, Alison, Rolexes are not the last thing you want to mention, are they?
No. We have a feature, thank you so much for always giving me a platform to talk my own show, called Little Reader, and it's 10 years old this month, which I can't believe it. So our original Little Readers are not little anymore. So we've got lots of authors joining us tomorrow to celebrate that.
Are you going to speak to any of the original Little Readers?
We've got one, but he's 19 and a little reluctant.
So
we do have our regular Little Reader. So it's lovely. Like it's one of the most, honestly, I get emails about it all year round. I could book it for a year because it's only happening once a week. And it's really lovely. So we're going to celebrate that tomorrow.
What was your favorite? What is the kids' book you recommend to people as a result of all those Little Reader slots?
Jacqueline Wilson was really popular with us. David Walliams always people.
Sorry, Jacqueline Wilson passed me by and I interviewed her last year.
And everyone went crazy for
people
it.
People were just mindled in this show.
We were doing the same
time. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. And people were just mad out here.
Yeah.
What's the book she wrote?
She has written 102. Okay. And do you know what I loved? Paul Howard and The Cheese Nightmares. That's one of my favorite books.
Oh, yes.
It's Aldrin Adams and The Cheese Nightmares. And so he's leaving a voice note for people. Loads of authors are leaving little voice notes for little readers.
What was your favorite book as a child? Your favorite children's book?
Oh, God. You go first. Well, I think of one.
What age group are we talking? Like James and the Giant Peach territory?
Yeah, whatever. What book stands out from your youth that you would remember?
Adrian Mole, I mean.
Adrian Mole, brilliant, yeah. Silver Sword. Did you read Silver Sword?
No.
I Am David.
That did all the like kind of country
super book.
Little House in the Prairie, Black Beauty kind of books. But my favorite one to read to my daughter when we were younger was Room on the Broom. I still love that one.
Yeah, so that is nice. Anyway.
Did you ever hear her sing? Did you ever hear Julia Donaldson sing?
No.
No.
It's an experience. She's like, you know, rich as Croesus and could get anybody in the world to sing for her, but she insists on singing herself. Not good.
Oh, dear.
I can't be good at everything.
I didn't know which way that was going to go. All right. Anyway, brilliant. That's better. It was bad. Jerry Gilroy, Alison Curtis, thank you both very much. I will be back on Monday at 4. Have a great weekend, everybody.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.